You are listening to the Outright Action International podcast, sharing stories of LGBTIQ people everywhere.
So, if you can tell me your name and why you're here in New York right now, and a little bit about your work.
My name is FJ Genus. I work with an organization in Jamaica called Translate Jamaica, and our mandate is to promote the health and well-being of the Jamaican transgender community and that of the wider Caribbean. I'm here in New York, currently attending the CSW conference. We had a panel with ECADE the other day, which was largely successful. We spoke about the challenges of LGBT persons in the workplace and the different situations in different countries such as Jamaica, Belize, and Barbados.
Was there anything during the discussion that you would like to highlight or comment on, looking back on it?
I found it interesting that the situation in Barbados, even though they're a part of the Caribbean, is quite different from that in Jamaica. While Marissa was speaking, there were some similarities in the type of jobs that trans women especially had access to. Just mostly stuff like cosmetology, little things that had to do with skills and trades, not so much quote-unquote traditional careers, such as probably being a lawyer, a doctor, or IT professional, something like that, but stuff that was more informal economy-like. So I found that interesting, that the discrimination that we face as transgender people trying to access employment was much different from what they were experiencing in Barbados in terms of, it doesn't seem to be as overt in Barbados as it is in Jamaica, when just being transgender kind of automatically disqualifies you from working in certain spaces. But in Barbados, they seem to be a lot more accepting, so it wouldn't particularly affect as much people from the community as it does in Jamaica. So I found that to be a little interesting. Also, from the Belize standpoint, having Dericia be an openly lesbian member of the military, you would not find that in Jamaica. Persons are still very much closeted because of fear of employment security. Nobody would, especially in an institution like the military, try to come out and say, hey, I'm openly gay or openly lesbian or openly transgender for that. And in fact, speaking about this, Marissa and I are heading to the Dominican Republic later this month to participate in another conference on political leadership and LGBT participation. And in talking, in assessing our political landscape, we don't have any openly gay members of the LGBT community in politics. While persons might suspect that some of our political persons are in fact members of the community, none of them have outright said, yes, I am gay, or yes, I'm lesbian. And of course, nobody has come out and said, hey, I'm transgender. Just looking at the different countries that already have political representation from the LGBT community and noting that Jamaica is a far way off is something that's a little disheartening, but it gives you something to work forward to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, towards.
Were there any questions from the audience?
Yes.
The reception from the audience?
Yes, there were a couple questions from the audience, just asking us, how do we engage the community, especially those who might not live in, metropolitan areas of cities that we have easier access to, those who come from, the fringes, rural areas, stuff like that, how we engage with them, how we build a sense of community, how are we tackling, the issues that affect us in the workplace and then in the general society. And there was also the issue of somebody from the UK was speaking about their homeless population and if it occurs within the Caribbean and how we deal with it, which is also interesting because Jamaica has a large population of displaced GMT youth, gay men who have sex with men and transgender persons, and Barbados doesn't. So it was interesting to know the differences even just within the Caribbean. Those are some of the things that came out. In terms of community building, Belize and Jamaica have a similar approach in which we try to host social events and sporting events to kind of bring the community together to foster a sense of kinship amongst one another, to build friendships and relationships and stuff like that, keep the community together so it's easier to mobilize when the time comes. We found that works well in Jamaica and Belize. In Barbados, probably not so much, but they're working on it, you know, so they're going to adopt some of our strategies. But I mean, in Jamaica, you can't go wrong with rum and food. You can't go wrong with rum and food and just, you know, just social events, parties, movie screenings, stuff like that. You know, sports day or first sports day for Pride celebrations last year was a huge hit. I've actually never seen so many queer people in one space in Jamaica. Oh. Yeah, we took over. We went to the University of the West Indies, our Mona campus, and we took over the UWE Mona Bowl. That's where they have all the sporting activities. We took it over. It was just like, it was a sports day for the actual campus and not just the gay community. I know people from all over the island were coming in just because of other celebrations. It was really great. I mean, everybody participated in one way or another. People were there cheering each other on. It was a friendly rivalry against the different houses. It was really great. So we know that in our context, you know, the social activities work well for community building, because people like to connect that way. People like to get to know you. People like to meet new friends and stuff like that, and keep in touch. And so it was really good.
How did it feel to be in a space where it felt like everybody was getting along?
It was phenomenal, and it was kind of overwhelming, because I remember a decade ago you would not have had that. Those things weren't even on your radar. It wasn't even like you could aspire to those things, because given our socio-political landscape, you know, anything that's LGBT belongs in the shadows, swept under the rug kind of thing. We don't have a place in society, and integrating into society was really hard back then. It's a little bit easier now, and I really think that what has helped to contribute to the reformation of attitudes and perceptions is just sharing your personal stories, because a lot of times Jamaicans think that this whole LGBT thing, quote unquote, is a foreign import, that, you know, our local queer community doesn't exist, and if we do exist, it's because we're modeling what is seen and portrayed in the US media. So having the stories come from the individuals themselves, members of the queer community, you know, hey, I'm your brother, I'm your sister, I'm your co-worker, I'm the person that, you know, serves you at a restaurant, you know, I'm the person that serves you at a bank, that kind of thing. I'm the one that helps you pick out your clothes when you go shopping, you know, I'm the one that helps to provide you with healthcare, you know, that kind of thing. Just making the stories more real, more personal, making ourselves more relatable, that has really helped to kind of change the perception of persons, and also embolden our allies to come out more in support of us. Because it's not that we don't have pockets of acceptance, it's just that if you vocally express your support of LGBT rights and LGBT persons, then you yourself might be ostracized, you know, just because it's a quote-unquote unpopular opinion still. But we've seen different shifts, not just in the way we view our LGBT community, but the way that we view politics and political and civic participation, the way in which we're holding our government more accountable, the way in which we're, you know, clamoring for more transparency when it comes to our governance. So there are a lot of shifts that are taking place in Jamaica right now, just not just for the LGBT community, but as well as, you know, just general how we approach civic liberties, political liberties, and governance.
So intersectionality is really helping to influence this kind of
And I think
bit of change.
Yeah, I think the next step really is to have an open member of the LGBT community, or somebody who's already in politics, come out and say, hey, I'm LGBT. Right? I think that now would help to tie everything back together. Also, if we could, you know, it's actually a really great idea if we could get persons from different professions who are actually open to coming out and saying, hey, I'm LGBT or I'm an ally, then I think that also would help to tie into the whole movement to help it, you know, progress a little bit faster. So I'm actually going to see if I can go work on that project when I get back. Thanks for that.
What about the other side to that? Like, here at the UN right now, there's a lot of conservatives. Have you encountered anyone?
I've encountered one conservative so far.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They approached you?
Yeah, she approached me because she didn't understand how I could be a heterosexual man of transgender experience. Which to me, I mean, because of the terminology, I suppose, might have been confusing for her. But to me, it's a non-issue. But again, this just highlights the need for education and also for sensitization, because some of the questions in which she asked me were kind of personal and intrusive.
Do you mind giving an example? This way, maybe other people will know not to.
I won't say what she said in particular, but in general rule of thumb, I mean, you don't ask somebody you don't know about their private parts, you know, what they were born as and stuff like that, you know, what kind of sex they engage in. You really want to steer clear of those very personal questions. Also, when it comes to transgender people, you don't want to just be like, okay, so are you on hormones? Are you going to do surgeries? Like, what are you going to do? I mean, those things are very intrusive, and that's a person's medical history that really has nothing to do with you. And also, when you do that, what you do is reduce transgender persons to just their bodies and their appearance and anything that they may or may not get done medically, right? So not every transgender person or gender non-conforming person has the desire to, you know, go through gender affirming procedures. Some persons are perfectly fine the way they are. Some persons, you know, are not, right? Mm-hmm. So it's really presumptuous and it's just dehumanizing, mm-hmm. to talk to a transgender person and just keep it medical, right? Yeah, just reduce them to just medical procedures and surgeries and stuff like that. That's dehumanizing, and we really shouldn't.
Something has come about recently about someone getting arrested in Jamaica for cybercrime.
Yeah, that's a very interesting case, but we know that we operate in a society wherein we have laws, and persons have to abide by these laws. And if the police have, you know, decided that she is guilty of infringing upon one of these laws, then they have all right to arrest her, and she has all right to due process, right? Mm-hmm. So we're watching it to see how it plays out. Our Cyber Crimes Act is really new, but we support LaToya. LaToya is one of our dearly loved activists. If it wasn't for LaToya, I probably wouldn't have engaged the way I have with JFLAG. So we support her. We're here for her. But as I said, if she's been found guilty of the law, then, you know, there's not much we can do. We just have to hope for her due process and stuff like that. And if we found that she's not given a fair trial, then, you know, of course we will, you know, take further action and come together and give her even more support. But it's a very interesting case. It's a very interesting case to follow.
It sounds like it has the possibility of setting precedents for cases to follow.
Yes, I think really what is occurring is that this will be one such case. And I also think it gives us an opportunity now to voice our concerns about how loosely it is phrased, and get that amended. But it really is, as you said, a case that will set some precedents as to how, you know, other cases are handled.
And is there anything that we should do as allies or not do as allies?
Well, I think we should all educate ourselves about the situation, the events that happened, and of course, the Jamaican legislation when it comes to this particular crime. It's malicious use of a computer for communications. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody needs to be aware of the situation, all the events that happened, because this is a very nuanced case, and we can't just take it at face value that, oh, she was speaking out against sexual violence, and that is why she's been arrested, or like the state is trying to muzzle her or anything like that. We really need to dig a little deeper and make sure that we're educated on all facets of the case before, you know, we give our blind support. Of course, she's an advocate, she's part of the community, so of course we're hoping for the best, but at the same time, you know, we have to operate within the confines of the law, even as advocates, even mm-hmm. as radical, you know, advocates. We really have to make sure that we toe that line and don't do anything illegal.
So from being here at CSW, what are some takeaways that you're going to take back to Jamaica and the community?
Yeah, it's been a really enlightening experience. Just this morning, Kenita kind of gave us a breakdown of how the negotiations work and how the UN operates and stuff like that, how the NGOs function within the space, how the political delegations function. So it's really been an eye-opening experience. I've enjoyed my time here. I've learned a lot. I've been inspired by a lot of the presentations, a lot of the testimonies coming out of the different countries. I've even gotten a lot of ideas to go home and implement, you know, kind of tweak to my context, yes, but implement nonetheless. So it's been really great networking and meeting people. The parties are good.
It's nice to have a social space.
Yeah, it's nice to have a social space, because, you know, when you come in, you're all about work and trying to get the language in and trying to lobby everybody, and especially your political delegation. You're trying to make sure that, you know, you find out what they're up to and try to, you know, introduce yourself and make sure they know where you're from and what you're doing and what you hope for. So to kind of, you know, give them a little motivation, you know, to kind of take on the cause of all Jamaicans and not just the particular set. So it's been really interesting. It's been really good, and I hope I'm invited to participate in future CSWs. But I like it. I like the snow.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I like the snow. People find it, you know, unusual as a Jamaican, but I do like the snow. But I've had a great time meeting people and networking. We've made some critical links that will help to move our work forward on the ground. You know that with transgender advocacy, it's still in kind of like its infant stages, so we really need all the help we can get, and I appreciate all the support from everybody. You know, it's really motivating, because sometimes you get really disheartened when you're trying to do some work and you're encountering all these different roadblocks, and mm-hmm. you kind of, you know, think that you reach the end of your rope, and then somebody comes along, gives you a little advice, you know, gives you a little motivation, some kind words and stuff, and you feel like you're ready to go out and fight again. So it's been really refreshing. Yeah, sometimes it's the little things, you know, like when you just hear the feedback from the community and they're like, hey, thank you for creating the space for us. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having this event. Thank you for including us and thinking about us. Thank you for fighting on our behalf. Because, you know, it's the whole thing about transgender issues is fairly new in Jamaica. Not a lot of people understand it, and some persons won't take the time. But just to know that you have people that you can reach out to for support, persons who are in your corner fighting for you, persons who will be, you know, your voice if you don't want to publicly come out and advocate mm-hmm. for yourself, or persons that will do that for you, you know, it's really powerful, and I'm honored to kind of serve the community, and it's really humbling when I get some of the feedback. You know, sometimes people will post on different things underneath a picture somebody posted of me or something, and be like, hey, you know, thanks FJ for having the strength to come out. Because of you, I started talking to my family, or because of you, I came out, or because of you, yeah, I accepted my identity or whatever. And it's kind of like, sometimes you don't see the impact, but sometimes somebody reaches out to you, and it's really amazing.
Thank you for listening. To hear more stories, subscribe to our podcast series on Outright Radio, discussing human rights for LGBTIQ people everywhere. For more information, visit outrightinternational.org.